We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Today, NPR's Tom Goldman reports the Tigers downed the Rangers last night.
Another great starting pitching performance by right-hander Doug Fister, three solo home runs, and the Tigers had what was perhaps a series-saving 5-2 win. It wasn't an elimination game for Detroit, but the way things were clicking for Texas in the first two games and not for the Tigers, it was pretty much a must-win situation. It wasn't easy. Texas struck for a run in the first inning, and when Detroit's Victor Martinez answered with a game-tying home run in the fourth, he appeared to injure his rib cage on the swing. From there, however, Fister clicked in. He gave up only one more run and didn't walk anyone in his 7-plus innings, and Detroit finally started getting timely hits. Game 4 is this afternoon. Tom Goldman, NPR News.
Hurricane Hova has slammed into Mexico's Pacific coast. The storm swamped some beach resorts in the area. I'm Craig Windham, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from CFP, Certified Financial Planner Professionals, Investments, Retirement, Taxes, helping bring clients' finances together at letsmakeaplan.org.
You can help every pledge go farther when you give to the Member Match Fund. Your contribution now before the pledge drive begins will build a challenge to urge more listeners to become supporters during the kickoff power hour, 7 to 8 a.m. October 20th. Send your check to WILL Radio, 300 North Goodwin, Urbana, Illinois, 61801, or give online at willpledge.org.
WILL programming is made possible by Strawberry Fields Natural Food Store, featuring locally grown and organic produce, freshly baked breads, a coffee bar, and bulk foods department. Strawberry Fields also offers natural vitamins, health and beauty products, household cleaning products, pet foods, and an in-store nutritionist to answer questions about healthy eating.
From Illinois Public Media, this is Focus on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. Good morning. I'm Celeste Quinn, the producer for the program, Harriet Williamson. Our technical director is Kyle Mabry. Well, today we open the phone lines and the email message folder for questions about diet and nutrition. Our guest is registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. And one of the topics we're going to take up this morning is breakfast. Susan calls it the foundation that prepares us for the day. And she has some interesting stories to tell us about breakfast and her work with athletes. Listeners, we look forward to your phone calls and email messages. Here are the phone numbers. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. The toll-free number is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-WILL. And our email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Susan Kundrat is a sports and wellness nutritionist and president of Nutrition on the Move. She's an adjunct lecturer with the University of Illinois Food Science and Human Nutrition Department. Susan, who is the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips, is also the sports dietitian for Illini Athletics and leads nutrition and cooking classes at the ARC, the Activities and Recreation Center at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, and email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Good morning.
Good morning, Celeste.
How are you?
I'm good. It's a beautiful morning again.
It is. And what did you have for breakfast?
Well, I had a pretty good breakfast. I had some high-fiber cereal, which is really my favorite. I think there's, when you look for cereal, you know, one of the things that we get from that breakfast cereal is fiber. And then there's a lot of cereals out there that have fiber and protein. If you look at something like one of my favorites, which I had was a oat squares cereal this morning, which also has good soluble fiber that can help bring down lipids. And some other good ones that are well-fortified, things like the frosted mini wheats and, of course, the total and the bran flakes and things like that. But just good old oatmeal is great, too. And as the weather gets colder, that's a wonderful cereal simply because, you know, it tastes good, it's warm, and there's a lot of fiber in there. One of the tricks that we use with our athletes at the university is to just make oatmeal, even if it's the quick kind, the packet of oatmeal, and then put a tablespoon or two of peanut butter in there and mix it in. That way you bump up that protein quite a bit in there too.
Yeah. When athletes are traveling, what's the training table breakfast look like, or the day of the event breakfast table look like?
Well, it depends a lot on the team. It depends on budget. It depends on, you know, what they're able to do. If a training table is able to be set up specifically for athletes, I just put a list together for a team yesterday who will be traveling next week, and we look at things like scrambled eggs or omelet bars or things like that to get some good protein. We often request yogurt and make sure there's peanut butter and bagels and those kinds of things, maybe even a trail mix, granola, that kind of thing, so you can get you know, some protein in there. The best meat really in the morning is ham or Canadian bacon. So sometimes on a bar, they might set up egg sandwiches with Canadian bacon, something like an egg McMuffin type thing, which is actually really good in the morning for any of us, but particularly for athletes, if we're looking for kind of leaner protein, but something that is going to stick with you for a while. Bacon, turkey bacon, sausage, those things are okay. There's just not much protein in there. So it's mostly fat. There's not really that much meat. They taste good, but they don't really help you all that much in the morning. And then just simple things like I mentioned, the yogurt, but also just drinking more milk and chocolate milk and getting some of those proteins in that are liquid protein that gets in the system really quickly can be helpful.
Yeah. They're fortunate they can, you know, have a pretty high caloric breakfast. I'm wondering, in terms of for the rest of us, what does a good breakfast look like? We're not quite that active.
Right. If for most people, you really want to have three things covered in your breakfast. So one would be some type of whole grain, or let's say fiber. So let's say if you had a high fiber cereal in the morning, that's an easy thing to get, or a whole wheat toast or something like that. So something with a good fiber, good whole grain. Another thing would be a protein from somewhere. So for some people, that might be just milk or soy milk on the cereal, or it might be yogurt too, or it might be an egg, that kind of thing. So some type of protein, and then some type of fruit. So, you know, for example, something that would be really easy and fast might be half a cup of yogurt, because that's good, particularly Greek yogurt, since it's higher in protein. So maybe you have that, and you have just a third a cup of whole grain granola or some type of cereal, and then top it off with some fresh strawberries. So you'd have everything covered in kind of a parfait that's not that many calories, but it's going to be really good in terms of covering the basics for you.
In your work with athletes and with the general public, have you found people who don't eat breakfast, and then part of your job is to say, this is really an important meal? Have you found that?
Oh, sure. You know, there's a lot of reasons why people don't eat breakfast. One might be that they just don't like to eat in the morning. One might be that that takes too much time, or they think it takes too much time. We try to combat those types of things. For example, some of my interns from the nutrition department here last night had one of our fuel stops. We call them fuel stops. Every 2 weeks on Tuesdays, we set up some type of quick recipe for our athletes at the academic center, and they come in and they take a study break and they learn how to make something. So, for example, last night my interns set up what we call omelet in a mug. So a real simple way to just make an omelet in a mug in the microwave. It takes 1 or 2 minutes. You don't have to get a pan dirty. Very easy. So they make them with the athletes. Athletes learn how to make them. They try everything. And just doing simple things like that we find make a big difference, because someone might think, gosh, by the time I get the pan out and I do this, so we say, well, you can get egg beaters, you can have these things ready. It takes you really, we try to make everything 5 minutes or less so that nobody has to take a lot of time in the morning. They can still sleep in. We want our athletes to sleep as long as they can. They don't get enough sleep generally, so we don't really want them getting up early to make a big breakfast.
Yeah, that's another excuse, I guess.
It is, for sure.
People say, oh, I just like to stay in bed until I have to get up. Mm-hmm. So how do you make an omelet in a mug?
Well, it's really easy. In fact, I don't know, we can look at some of the recipes that we brought here, but the Denver omelet there is one that they made last night, and that's just green peppers and onion. You can have those chopped up ahead of time. You can buy chopped up veggies now. You can put a little water in there and heat those in the microwave first in the cup so they get kind of soft. Then you can put some egg beaters in there, maybe a little bit of cheese, and then generally between 1 or 2 minutes in the microwave, if you do it in a mug, it's all done. Just mix it. I always tell people to mix it together. Make sure you take it out within a minute. Mix it. Make sure you get everything cooked up. Might need to put it back in for another 30 seconds or so. And then that's it. So everything's done in one little dish. And if you don't want to mess with any of the veggies, then simply you can make it with eggs or egg beaters and a little bit of cheese, and there you go.
That's a pretty good hit for protein, 22 grams right. of protein and 122 calories.
It's not bad at all.
And we have these recipes that we're talking about this morning, and if people are interested, they can send us an envelope with their address, right. and we'll get it right out to them. The one that I think is kind of fun is Fiesta.
Yes.
The Fiesta omelet. And I actually mentioned this in my promo mm-hmm. yesterday. This involves just putting a little bit of salsa, chunky salsa, in with your eggs and maybe a little avocado.
Yes. And avocado, of course, is good. Sometimes people stay away from it because it's higher in calories and higher in fat, but it's really good fat. It's monounsaturated fat. It's good for you. And it really adds a lot of flavor to that. But salsa, we've got to remember that salsa is just really super to use because it's a tomato product that's been cooked down. So nutritionally, that adds some extra nutritional benefit from the lycopene and the antioxidants. And it's a way that people can get in veggies. So,
okay. And for this one, you cook the eggs first in the mug, and then you add your cheese, salsa, and avocado
yep.
in there. Just stir it in mm-hmm. or put it on top.
So it's very easy.
What about cereals? I think that's the go-to mm-hmm. product for breakfast, and some cereals are better than others.
Right. Well, a couple things you can look for. One, of course, is to look for on the label, if the label says it's whole wheat or whole rice or a grain, whole oats. And so if that's the first ingredient, it says oats or it says wheat bran or it's actually that grain first. That's a good sign right there. The next thing you look for is the fiber. And you want something with at least 3 or 4 grams of fiber. A good slice of bread has about 3 grams of fiber. A good slice of whole grain bread. So for a serving of cereal, it should have at least 3 grams. Now there are cereals on the market that have 12 grams of fiber because they add a lot of additional fiber to it. So you can find cereals with a lot of fiber. And so that's kind of the second thing to look for. Third thing to look for is the sugar, because under carbohydrate, you'll see sugar. And usually, if you think about sugar, about 4 grams on a label is a teaspoon of sugar. So it's reasonable to think if you can keep it to a couple teaspoons or so in the serving, that's 8 grams of sugar. You know, somewhere between 5 and 10 grams is probably the most that you'd want of sugar. So the lower the sugar, the better. I always tell people it's much better to get unsweetened cereal and you add a little sugar yourself, because a lot of times you can get by with a half a teaspoon mm-hmm. and that'll sweeten it fine.
Or dried fruit.
Or dried fruit, right. Dried fruit or fresh fruit, or even use a little sugar substitute if you don't want regular sugar. But the pre-sweetened cereals, and if you must have pre-sweetened cereals, I certainly have clients and athletes who say, I've got to have my Frosted Flakes, or I've got to have, you know, Corn Pops or whatever it might be. So I always try to get them to mix them half and half. Maybe mix them with Cheerios. Yeah, still, you get that sweetened flavor, but it's not quite as much sugar. So yeah. There's ways you can do that.
Yeah. Well, some people really enjoy that whole grain and that big fiber hit, but mm-hmm. some people would liken it to sawdust.
Yes, that's right. I mean, and some things you really have to get used to. I mean, there can be a big, you know, a big difference in when you make those changes. But we try to find cereals, for example, that are kind of in the middle, that are a little bit sweet but still have more fiber. And that might be something like, you know, any kind. There's a lot of brands that have the Frosted Mini Wheats, for example. And those are good because they're kind of sweetened, but they still are a whole grain. They have a little bit more protein because they're whole grain. And then there's all the cereals, like any of the, you know, more natural cereals like the Kashis and all those brands that have a lot of extra protein, usually soy protein added or milk protein, and they've got extra fiber.
What is it about breakfast, excuse me, that really gets us primed for the day? What's the science here mm-hmm. behind the first meal of the day?
Well, there are several things that are going on. One thing we think about is the fact that, of course, your body hasn't had fuel for a long time. So you've gone all night long, you haven't had fuel. Your body's ready for some nutrition, basically, to kind of kick it back into gear. So we know when you eat, that increases your body's metabolism, that gets your body burning calories, really changes a lot of things hormonally when you get some food in your system. So that's part of the reason a lot of studies find that people, when they eat a good breakfast in the morning, they kind of get going. They may burn more calories simply because they have more energy. They feel like doing more. The other thing we know is that when people eat a decent breakfast in the morning, maybe they don't snack as much later in the day. And so it may be that if you don't eat breakfast, you get to that 10 or 11 o'clock hour about right now. And people say, well, gosh, if I see any donuts, if I see whatever I see, I'm going to eat because I haven't eaten. And so it prevents that. So you tend to eat better overall because you've planned it out. You've got something in your system and you don't get too hungry. And so that's the real benefit of trying to eat more times during the day. And then there's been a lot of interesting research come out in the last few years, really looking at this whole idea of when you break down your food, how many times have you broken it down during the day? If you eat more times versus fewer times in a day, you may burn more calories simply if you spread it out, as long as you don't eat too much. Now, there are cases where people add the snacks in and things and they just get too many calories. So we have to watch that. But there's also a real benefit to getting not only the whole grain and the fruit in the morning, but adding that protein in the morning. There's, you know, protein really provides satiety for us. So we feel more satisfied. We feel more full when we have an egg or two, or when we have, you know, I tell my athletes at the very minimum, if nothing else, maybe just get sliced turkey or ham or roast beef, get some little tortillas, roll them up, roll 3 or 4 ounces up in a tortilla, put them in little Ziploc bags and freeze them. So in the morning, you get out one of your little tortillas with 4 ounces of ham, you grab a glass of milk or juice, and you're out the door because you can freeze those ahead of time. And then you've got protein, a little bit of carbohydrate, and it adds that in terms of maintaining lean muscle. So getting protein in the morning along with your breakfast helps you maintain that muscle when you're obviously trying to stay fit and healthy. And even as we get older, we're trying to maintain our muscle whether we're exercising or not. That's one of the key things to focus on as we age, is to try to prevent muscle loss. And so I think anybody who's exercising, anybody who's growing, anybody who's older and trying to maintain muscle really requires some more protein. Mm.
This is Focus, and this morning we're talking about diet and nutrition with Susan Kundrat of Nutrition on the Move. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this morning with questions, comments. Join us with a phone call or by email. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. The toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu, will-talk@illinois.edu. Excuse me, I'm having a little allergy problem at this time of the year, so bear with me here. Anyway, we're happy to have Susan with us this morning. We're talking about breakfast, but any kind of question or comment about diet and nutrition is welcome this morning. 333-9455, 800-222-9455, will-talk@illinois.edu. I know that when I was younger, some of my friends in high school would say, well, skip breakfast, and it was the whole dieting kind of thing. That way, you know, you're saving X amount of calories, 200 calories or whatever. But apparently that's not borne out by what we know about breakfast.
Right. Part of that is the idea that really you don't have to eat that many calories in the morning to get a decent breakfast in. Kind of like we mentioned, if you have whole grain cereal, have a little milk or yogurt, have some fruit, it's not that many calories. And so, but the idea is, it gives your body that nutrition. It gets things going. So you probably end up burning a lot more than you take in simply by eating. And so that idea is kind of, you know, on the wayside. And like you say, it's false because of that. And so, you know, when we start looking at long-term data, there's some a large study that people may have heard of, the National Weight Control Registry. And that's a large study that looks over time, year after year after year, of people who've kept weight off after they've lost it. So they've lost significant amounts of weight, 30 pounds or more usually, and they've kept it off over the years. And then we take a look at saying, well, what are these people doing? You know, what are they eating, first of all? How are they eating? How are they breaking down their calories? And how are they exercising? And what are they doing to maintain this weight loss? And some things really are glaring. The first one is that most people, when they've lost weight and keep it off, are active at least an hour a day. So they're doing at least an hour of walking or some type of activity, or maybe more, 1 to 2 hours a day. So, of course, we know that for many people, we don't get that. A lot of people don't get that exercise or that activity in. And that's where we start saying a lot of the impetus that we've heard about: park your car farther away, get your daily activity in, even develop communities where you're walking. Those kinds of things come from some of that data and some of that research. So we know that that's important. We also know that 80% of the people in this National Weight Control Registry have made a consistent habit of eating a good breakfast. And so most of the people who've lost the weight ate a good breakfast. Most of the people who didn't keep it off, or many of those, did not eat a good breakfast. So not to say that's a cause and effect, but there's a definite correlation there. And so we're seeing now from a lot of the research that this is really bearing out. And just the idea that we're trying, the goal here is not just to lose weight and keep it off. The goal is to have a fit body. So when we're thinking about fitness and health, we're thinking about muscle. And so anytime we think about nutrition, we really want to be thinking about, am I fueling my muscle? Am I fueling my bone? It's not just about, can I lose that weight? Because it depends so much on what weight you lose.
Let's take some calls now. We've got a listener waiting for us on line one in Urbana. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, thank you for the conversation about nutrition and breakfast. In the morning, I normally have a regular elimination pattern and get up, eliminate, feel very clean and just feel great, and sometimes not inclined to eat breakfast. Perhaps you could talk about elimination eating patterns so that one actually feels alive and one wanting to eat that breakfast in the morning after eliminating.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think
thank you for
the call. When you think about, let's say, getting up, getting your daily routine going, you know, eliminating, going to the bathroom, feeling good, a lot of times we feel lighter, we feel better after that. I think the thing to think about is that, you know, when you do that, you also need to sort of take in some more nutrition, because part of the reason we stay regular is if we're eating enough. If we're getting enough bulk in the diet, if we're getting enough fiber in the diet. When we look at typical breakfast, and I'm not saying, you know, just the egg and bacon breakfast, but if we look at kind of healthy alternatives and healthy options for breakfast, in most of those breakfasts, we may get in a third of the fiber of the day. Because if you do think you have a real high fiber cereal, you have fruit, you could easily get 10 grams of fiber in a breakfast. That's really not hard to do. So the types of foods we tend to eat for breakfast tend to be these types that help maintain long-term gut health, long-term anti-constipation regimens in your day and those kinds of things. And the other thing we know is that when we get up, we're really dehydrated. So most of us are going to be down a pound or two in the morning simply because we lose weight while we sleep. We lose fluid. We get dehydrated. And so that's part of what happens with breakfast, is you get fluids in with your breakfast too. So that kind of kicks everything into gear in terms of gut health as well. And then we've got to think about, are there other things that help the digestion that we might get in the morning? And I've mentioned yogurt before. We know yogurt, if you can handle yogurt, eating yogurt every day. If you can't handle milk-based yogurt, maybe soy-based yogurt, is really, really good for the gut. It's good for the intestines. It's good to keep your body and your bowels moving to add that good bacteria. So there'd be a lot of simple ways and reasons to get that breakfast in the morning that will keep you feeling good and feeling like your body stays on a good elimination pattern. So I'd say breakfast just helps you keep doing that on a daily basis.
Well, let's take another call. This is also a listener in Urbana, line two. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have two questions, kind of unrelated. One was, I work with people who are on an extreme budget, a lot of people who can't afford health care, can't afford their own medicines. What sort of advice can we offer them in terms of preparing a menu for optimizing health, excuse me, and optimizing their fitness on the budget that they're on, and the financial budget, as well as the, you know, being budget on time, because a lot of them are working two jobs and so on. My other question was, can you speak to the organic movement, how important it is to have organic food versus non-organic food? Thank you.
Okay, some good questions
there. Yeah, very good questions. Well, I will say, first of all, breakfast as as we think about the cost of meals in general, it's a really low-cost meal, can be a very low-cost meal. So let's say, for example, if somebody's on a budget, a real simple thing would be to buy things in bulk. So, for example, oatmeal. If you buy oatmeal and you buy the big containers of oatmeal that you cook yourself as opposed to the small packaged rip-top oatmeal that you can make very quickly. You can still make oatmeal fast. In fact, you can make oatmeal for 3 days and keep it in your fridge and just warm it up in the microwave. That's really, really inexpensive. Eggs are a very inexpensive protein source, and they're, again, easy to fix, not difficult, those kinds of things. So even something simple like oatmeal and an egg, and when we talk about produce, then what I would say is just remember that eating any kind of produce is good, even if it's not always fresh. So, for example, if the produce is canned or if it's frozen, or, you know, I work a lot with our local food bank, and a lot of times we try to have more and more fresh produce all the time. It's not always available, but we often have canned fruit, things like that. So even something like some canned peaches, oatmeal, and an egg, it's really low cost, maybe 50 cents if that for breakfast, and easy. So that would be something simple. Peanut butter is another pretty low-cost protein. So whole wheat toast, peanut butter, maybe a little bit of juice. So there's ways to get that in that would be cheaper than a prepared cereal or even something like yogurt. We say, well, Greek yogurt's the best. It has more protein. It's double the cost. So any kind of yogurt's good. And so get the yogurt that's on sale. I tell my college athletes to do that too. Whatever's on sale that week, get it and use that one. That's fine. And even a little bit of yogurt adds a lot of nutrition, so you don't have to eat the whole container, maybe half a container. So those would be things I would say for breakfast that make it pretty inexpensive.
Yeah. Also for the listener and for others, for all of us, I would recommend an article online at WebMD, and it's called Breakfast for a Buck.
Perfect.
Breakfast for a Buck. For example, I have it up here on the screen, one whole wheat bagel, one egg, a slice of cheese gets you in at $1.01. So the bagel puts you back 41 cents, the egg 20 cents, the cheese 25 cents. And apparently, this is kind of interesting, egg beaters also, one serving of an egg beater product, 15 cents.
It's not very much.
So again, that's a nice article. It's at WebMD, and we'll put a link on our website. WebMD, Breakfast for a Buck. This is Focus. Our guest this morning, registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. And we've been talking about breakfast, but other questions about diet and nutrition are invited. The number to call in the Champaign-Urbana area, if you'd like to join us, 333-9455, 333-WILL, toll free, 800-222-9455. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. What kind of comments do you get from athletes once they start a breakfast regimen?
Well, probably the biggest thing, I'm thinking of one of our men's basketball players who told me recently, of course, they're just getting into everything in the season. And, you know, he said, boy, I have so much more energy. And one of the things we're trying to do with that team is make sure that by the time they get to afternoon practice, they've taken in at least 2,000 calories. Well, for most of us, that's as much or more than we need during the whole day. But for these guys, they're going to burn 2, 3, 4,000 calories in their practice. So we've got to get them a good breakfast, a decent luncheon. So by the time they come to a workout, they're not so low energy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So for most athletes, they'll say, I feel better. I have better energy. Once I get in a habit of it, it doesn't take so long. I think sometimes it's more the idea of thinking you got to get up and do this. That's a little bit hard to handle. And then once you do it, you're in much better shape. And so, you know, we see that for all of our athletes, male and female. So if we've got gymnasts who are practicing, you know, working out 4 hours in the afternoon that they might do, boy, if they don't get breakfast in and then just get a little lunch after about 2 hours of their workout, they really just don't have it anymore. And coaches will tell me too, boy, when my team gets breakfast in, do they have a great practice? Because, of course, they're more focused. They're not as worried about when they're going to eat. They're more apt to have energy to go a little bit harder and a little bit longer.
I won't skip it anymore.
You won't skip it, no. So that's good.
Let's take another call. This is a listener in Champaign, south of Champaign, on line one. Good morning.
Hello?
Hi, line one. Go ahead.
Yes, ma'am. I had a question for you about the breakfast thing. I used to be an athlete, and I used to run 30 miles a day, 10 in the morning, 10 in the afternoon, and 10 in the evening. And I, like you wouldn't believe back then, but I find myself now, as an older, I'm 44 now, if I have breakfast in the morning, I constantly am hungry all day long. How can I get away from having to eat all day if I have breakfast?
Mm-hmm. Well, your question is a common one because, you know, there's no doubt that if you get some fuel in the morning, your body starts processing fuel better. And it gets it. Once it gets through the stomach, you're hungry again. That's normal. It's actually a good sign. It's a normal thing. Part of what we've got to make sure of when you have breakfast is that there is something with what we call staying power with it. So, for example, if you just have a bowl of cereal and you have a banana and there's really not much fat or maybe not that much protein, then you may get hungry within 2 hours. And a lot of people will tell me this. They say, well, you tell me to eat breakfast, but then I'm hungry again in 2 hours or 3 hours. But again, if you take, let's say if you take your oatmeal and you add in some peanut butter into that, or you have yogurt with your breakfast, or you have that egg sandwich. Usually if you have an egg sandwich and a bowl of strawberries, that might be 300 calories, but you're not going to be hungry for a while because that's going to stay with you because of the fat and the protein and the fact that it just doesn't get digested all that fast. And so some of it is the composition of what you eat. So I guess I would say make sure there's protein included, bump that up in the morning. Make sure you have enough fluids, too. Sometimes we get hungry fast because we're thirsty. And again, we wake up dehydrated. So if we've eaten and then we get real thirsty, we tend to feel hungry and thirsty. Sometimes it's hard to know what's what. But try to make sure that breakfast is a little more substantial rather than just a quick thing. Sometimes people will have just a granola bar and then they'll be hungry in an hour because their body's trying to break that down and they feel the stomach acid. But, you know, I tell people, take a granola bar, but again, maybe put a cheese stick on top or put peanut butter on top so there's some protein and fat.
Okay, very good. This is Focus. We're talking this morning about diet and nutrition. Our guest is licensed registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. More after a short break.
WILL programming is made possible by Strawberry Fields Natural Food Store, featuring locally grown and organic produce, freshly baked breads, a coffee bar, and bulk foods department. Strawberry Fields also offers natural vitamins, health and beauty products, household cleaning products, pet foods, and an in-store nutritionist to answer questions about healthy eating.
And we're back with Susan Kundrat. My name is Celeste Quinn. This is Focus. If you'd like to join us this morning with a phone call or by email, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Let's take another call. This is a listener in Champaign on line two. Good morning.
Good morning, Ms. Kundrat. I'm enjoying your talk on keeping the weight off. I just have a question. I'm a vegetarian, and I love the eggs, but they tell you the egg white is good and the yellow is not so good if you're trying to keep the weight off. Is that true?
Well, you've certainly got it right in that the white is where the protein is. I mean, most of the protein in an egg is in the white. The yolk has some protein, too, but it has more of the fat. So definitely more of the calories are in that yolk. And so a couple of things you could do if you want to use just real eggs, you could use one egg and add two whites to it and just throw the yolks away or maybe give them to your dog. but you could certainly, it's good for the dogs, good for the hair.
Good for the dog, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there's good things in the yolk. I mean, there's vitamin E, there's other things in the yolk that are good. It's just that's where more of those calories are. So you could do something like the egg beaters or you could do just make your own mostly egg white type of eggs.
So how many egg whites, Ms. Kundrat, would you advise, for example? You know, I love eggs.
Mm-hmm.
So every morning if I want to have two egg whites or three, is that too much?
No, there's really no problem with the whites since they're not going to increase cholesterol. They're really not going to cause any problem at all. You could eat probably as many whites as you wanted, and it would just be, it's basically just high-quality protein. That's all it is.
So just the egg whites with a glass of juice and oatmeal, is that now? See, oatmeal is a bit starchy, too, for people who are trying to lose and then keep it off. So I'm not sure if you can add the proteins and the oatmeal along, because would that be too much?
Well, let's say, for example, if you had just a small serving, if you had oatmeal and what you ate was about a half a cup of oatmeal, that's maybe 100, 120 calories.
Right.
So you have that. You have, let's say, two egg whites is about 100 calories. So right now you're up to about 200.
Yes.
And then you add in, say, a half cup of berries to that, which is maybe 20 or 30 calories. So your whole breakfast might only be 200 to 250 calories.
But yes.
You don't eat a whole big bowl of oatmeal. That's when it tends to get caloric, and you've got brown sugar and cream or something on there too, but it sounds good. But you're right.
So if every day you want to have egg whites, just, you know, with no oil or little oil or just poached, that's fine, right?
Sure, that would be
not
fine.
A problem?
Nope, not a problem. So that would be, you know, that would be a good option. And I think the other thing to think about if you're looking at calories is there's other ways to kind of get around that but still get the protein in. I think one of our callers earlier mentioned the organic movement and kind of, you know, to bring that idea into here too. You can still eat mostly organic and not spend a whole lot of money, because that depends on what the costs are, the seasonal. You know, some produce is still pretty low cost if it's organic. Not everything. You have to kind of look and pick and choose at what's available. But even if you did something like, you know, a half a cup of yogurt, a banana, and maybe a half a cup of juice, or half a cup of frozen fruit, altogether that might be a dollar if you put that in and make a, you know, blend that up and make a smoothie. But boy, that's a great start to the day. You could add in things like a little bit of wheat bran or a little bit of ground flaxseed for some fiber, or you could add just a little bit of dry oatmeal in your smoothie. That works really great. And all of a sudden you have something that's maybe a dollar and a half that can be mostly organic and have everything you need too. So there's a lot of ways to do it that really don't cost a lot of money either and are really, really healthy.
I hope that helps. Thanks for the call this morning. I guess what we're looking at is maybe if we thought about it as a square or a rectangle, you got four corners. So you want to have high quality carb.
Yep.
Protein.
Yep.
Fiber.
Yes.
Fluids.
Yeah. And fruit somewhere. But fiber might be the fruit.
Might be the fruit.
Right. Right.
All right. Let's take another call. This is a listener in Aurora. Line 4. Hi.
Yes. Good morning.
Hi.
I won't even tell you what I had for breakfast. I have two questions. One, I have a son that's kind of gone off the deep edge as far as being a health nut here. But he's always concerned about hydrogenated oils and foods and such. And I was just wondering your thoughts on that.
Well, I think with hydrogenated oils, that's certainly something to be mindful of, to be concerned with. You know, kind of our goal when we're thinking about healthy eating is to eat as close to the earth as possible, to eat as many whole grains, fruits, vegetables, things that are less processed. That's not always easy for people to do, depending on time and even access to a good kitchen to cook and all these kinds of things. But if that's the base of what you're trying to do, then you're not going to get a lot of hydrogenated fats simply because you're going to eat more just regular foods. And then when you look at the processed foods, you can say, well, I'm going to try to limit the hydrogenated fats. Certainly a lot of companies have cut those out of foods or decreased them. But the main place we might get those things would be, you know, packaged products, of course, and baked goods and those kinds of things. So I think it's a good idea to be aware of it. But certainly as a dietitian, having been a dietitian for a long time now, 20-some years, you do see trends come and go. And I think what we want to do is take something from everything. You know, the hydrogenated fat ideas, yes, that's important. I personally wouldn't go into somebody's cabinet and take out everything with hydrogenated fats, because some of these foods have other good redeeming qualities, even if they've got some hydrogenated fats. So I would look at the whole and say, that might be something a little higher. But if your whole meal has got a fruit and a veggie and a whole grain and then a little something with hydrogenated fat or a little bit in peanut butter or whatever it might be, I wouldn't worry about that too much, because you're looking at the sum of what you're eating, not just one thing. And I think we see that, you know, it comes in and out with different foods and different fads and those kinds of things. And if we kind of keep the mind that, you know, healthy eating really is eating most things that are really good for us, but everything doesn't have to be really good for us.
What is it Michael Pollan says? Eat food, mostly plants, not too much.
Right, exactly. And so my guess is probably your son is eating more that way too. You know, most people, when they become more aware of nutrition and more interested in trying to eat better, they naturally will eat more whole grains, beans, nuts, fruits, vegetables, things like that. And the whole hydrogenated fat thing becomes really not too big of a problem anyway, because they're probably not eating that many foods that might have a lot of hydrogenated fat.
Well, let's take another call. This is a listener in Champaign on line one. Good morning.
Yes. Could you say something about the degree of grind of whole grains? I'm mindful of following livestock around and seeing grains growing in their feces. It would seem to me that there's a whole lot of health associated with fineness of ground. So what does stone ground mean? And can you say something about the grinding of grains especially?
That's a good question. I wouldn't say I'm an expert in that area, but some things we do know to be true. One is, if you're eating more of the grain as it is, so let's say, for example, wheat berries or rye berries, which really are just the grain itself, that's generally healthier and better for you than having something that's ground into a fine powder, a flour, those kinds of things.
But does it pass through you without having been digested?
Well, that's the case. In some cases, it may be better in terms of bulk and helping you stay regular, but you may not absorb as many of the nutrients. Part of what we find from studies is that people who chew their food really well when they're eating more whole grains get a lot better nutrition out of it because they're taking time to eat. So, you know, it maybe has a lot of things going on where you're eating more whole grains, you're actually chewing for a longer period of time, so you're trying to break down those foods a little bit better so you can get the nutrients out of them. You know, one case in point that I see a lot is I see a lot of people using flaxseed, because we know that flaxseed is really high in good fiber. It's also real high in omega-3 fats. But the one thing we know about flaxseed is if it's not ground, you're not going to get the benefit of a lot of those nutrients. You'll still get the fiber, but you won't get the benefit of the omega-3. So in that case, you have to buy the flax itself or buy it in flax meal where it's already ground up, or grind it yourself and then eat it to have the most benefit of that. So what I would say is you're getting different things if you eat them different ways, but you want to make sure you chew well no matter how you do it. You know, we do think with oatmeal, if you get the whole oats and like the Irish oatmeal and the real good hard oatmeal that hasn't been broken down a lot, maybe a little bit better for you nutritionally. But regular oatmeal that we tend to buy that's kind of more processed is still good. So I think there's different ways to look at it. Some foods, if they're not as broken down, will have more benefit from a soluble fiber, maybe lipid lowering or blood sugar lowering standpoint if it's the actual grain.
So how do you know that? How do you know the difference between stone ground and stainless steel ground? What is the measure of how you read that?
Well, I guess what you would look at is what is on the label if it says stone ground. But again, I'm not the expert in how that's broken down. But buying something that's 100% whole grain, really, no matter how it's broken down, is, I'd say, the first step. And for a lot of people, that's kind of the key to get started.
If you experiment with different types of cornmeal, you'll know that some are finer. There's a corn flour, and then there's a very coarse cornmeal that is pretty tough. So I think if you're looking for what you like, that might be a place to do some experimentation. And I suppose just having a variety of foods and not worrying about it too much. If you enjoy it, steel cut oats, go for it. If you're really to a point where I gotta have the instant because that's what I can do.
Right.
It works.
Right. Okay. And I think from a nutrition standpoint, it's all going to depend on what you eat with it, too. Because if you have certain grains and certain fibers might decrease the absorption of some nutrients, but they might enhance the absorption of other nutrients. So it might be what's in that total diet as well.
And I think we really need to enjoy our food, right? Not worry so much about it. Let's take another call. This is a listener on a cell phone in Monticello. Line two, hi.
Yeah, I'm done a lot of research on nutrition, but I've never seen anything where the maximum amount of sugar, you know, how many grams of sugar maximum you should have a day. And then on another question, I was just wondering how many carbs you should eat after a strenuous workout at the gym. And I'll hang up and I'll listen. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for the questions.
Thank you. I'll deal with the carb question first, because then we can move to sugar from that. If we think about carbohydrate, there's a lot of research to say if you're working out an hour or more, if it's a real hard workout and you're kind of depleting some of your glycogen stores or your own carbohydrate stores, particularly the longer you go and the more aerobic your workout is, there's a great benefit of having carbohydrate and protein in after a workout to help for the carbs, replenish that glycogen within 30 or 45 minutes, and then again have a meal, pretty high carb meal within a couple hours. And if we look at how much that ends up being, kind of on that minimum end to start that recovery process, we look for taking your body weight. Let's say if you weigh 180 pounds, maybe take your body weight and take half of that weight, which would be 90, and try to eat 90 grams of carbohydrate if it's a real hard workout. So again, for most people who are walking an hour moderately or doing a moderate exercise, they probably just need water. But if somebody's training hard, particularly an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, you take your body weight, again, 180 pounds as an example, that'd be 90 grams of carbohydrate. 90 grams of carbohydrate times 4 calories a gram is 360 calories. So that gives you an idea of what that might be. That might be 24, 30 ounces of juice, for example, that was going to give you that amount of carbohydrate. And so that's really how you want to figure it. Not to say you won't benefit from 50 grams, you still will, but in terms of trying to really maximize that glycogen. So for somebody who's training hard, you can see why their carbohydrate needs really go up compared to somebody who's not exercising, because you want to make sure within that half an hour, 45-minute time you get that in. Kind of as a general rule of thumb, you know, we want to say for sugar, we want to just keep our sugars as low as possible. But if you're taking in a certain amount of carbohydrate, you probably don't want more than, you know, a quarter of that to be sugar. So let's say if somebody needs 400 grams of carbohydrate a day, which is quite a bit, that's 1,600 calories, probably you'd want to make sure that you're down, you know, no more than a quarter of that's actual sugar. So that'd be 100 grams, which is still a lot. That's 400 calories of sugar, but not too hard to get in if you drink a soda. But so you're thinking that your total carbohydrate is say 300-400 grams, no more than a quarter of that should be from sugar. And a lot of people eat a lot less than that from sugar, certainly. So the lower you can get, the better. One thing that gets really confusing on the labels is if you look at carbohydrate, you'll see sugar under that. A lot of times, a lot of those sugars are natural sugars found in something. So I'll have people tell me, well, I'm not going to eat fruit because there's sugar in fruit. You say, well, there is sugar in fruit, but it's natural fruit sugar. It's supposed to be there. It's not necessarily added. And we can't always tell on a label what's on there, what is added to it. So that's when we have to start looking at the ingredients and find out where do we see anything with OSE usually is a sugar, you know, a dextrose or a sucrose or something added. But if you're eating, again, more natural foods, if you're eating a lot of fruits and veggies and kind of trying not to eat as many packaged products, you're going to get less sugar automatically because you're going to eat more foods that just are naturally low in sugar.
Okay, very good. This is Focus. Our guest this morning, licensed registered dietitian Susan Kundrot. My name is Celeste Quinn. We've got a few more minutes left in this portion of the program. If you'd like to join us and talk with Susan, give us a call or drop us an email. Address 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. And I have an email address here, Omega-3 for Children. I enjoy the program. I have a question about recommendations for omega-3 for children. Mine are 1 and 4, and a reliable source for the amounts in various foods.
Good question. Well, I wouldn't say that the exact amounts for different age groups are all agreed upon. We know for adults with omega-3 intake that if you look at from you're getting in a, you know, what you're getting actually in a supplement, that a gram or two a day is kind of a typical supplement, 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams. For kids, there's all kinds of supplements that are out there. And I've seen everything up to a gram or two, and I've seen 500 milligrams, and there's really different varieties. I guess I would say for what you find in food and how to get that in, because there is such an interest in omega-3s, in particular omega-3s with brain development, and now we see that in a lot of baby foods and in a lot of formulas that are added, omega-3s and things as well. One thing I would say is the USDA, the United States Department of Agriculture, on their website, they have a listing of nutrients for various foods. And they have different fatty acids and omega-3s that you can find up there. So that would probably be a good source as far as trying to find what's in food. I guess for a general recommendation as far as just what to get in food, I would say, well, for kids, you just want to make sure you're including foods in their diet that do have omega-3s. And particularly, again, I would think things that are, milks that have omega-3 added if they're drinking milk yet, eggs that are omega-3 fortified eggs, and getting natural things like, if an infant can handle soy, if they've introduced that and they can handle that, that's has some natural omega-3s. Some of the nuts like walnuts have natural omega-3s. So different things like that, that if a child's far enough along that they're eating those kinds of foods that could be potential allergens, that you're including those things in. And just generally using some oils and using some, having fish and those kinds of things that can be helpful.
Okay. Let's take a call. This is a listener in Springfield, line one. Good morning.
Good morning. Hello?
Hi, go ahead.
I wondered about loss of nutritional value. If I cut up green peppers and carrots or bell peppers and carrots and things like that and put them in containers, and then I carry them with me, if I cut them up a day or two ahead of time, am I losing very much nutritional value?
Well, you certainly are losing some, because whenever we expose a food to air, when we cut it up or we expose it to air, some of those nutrients get oxidized. Usually we think of vitamin C getting oxidized when it's exposed to air. So you can do things to minimize that, because there's way more benefit from eating, let's say, a green pepper, even if it's cut up 3 days ago, than not eating it. So a couple things you can do is, you cut it up and right away you put it in that baggie or you put it in a container. You don't have it just sitting out on the counter for a while, for example. So that way, you minimize its exposure to air. Sometimes sunlight can, affect different nutrients. So you keep it in your lunch bag that's, not open to the light, for example, and you keep it in the containers and those kinds of things. So I don't know the percentage that it actually loses, but we do know that just by eating it, it way outweighs anything that you would lose. Plus, you could still get all the fibers, you get everything from that. So just what you're doing is cutting those up ahead of time, having those available, having them ready, really smart, because whatever negligible amount that you lose is not much compared to what you're
eating.
Nothing
to worry about, then.
No.
Okay, thanks very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call this morning. You want to leave us with a smoothie recipe, and we'll tell people how to get these breakfast starters?
That sounds great. We've got a handout here with some smoothies that are the fuel stops that my interns have put together. And here's a different one that maybe you haven't tried. This one has a cup of chopped peeled mango, which is really high in vitamin A, a third a cup of peach sorbet, so adds a little sweetener, half a cup of low-fat vanilla or plain yogurt, and a quarter cup of orange juice. And just blend all that up, and that gives you, this is called a mango lassi smoothie, but it's a really good smoothie to try. And just as a general rule of thumb for a smoothie, just add one part yogurt, one part juice, one part frozen fruit, and that's another way to do it. So,
and these can be made up ahead of time and put in the freezer, and then you just, in the morning, you could just grab and go if that's
exactly
a concern.
Yep, you can put it right in the freezer, make extra every time, and you're just covering so much nutrition ground by making a smoothie.
Okay, very good. And listeners, if you'd like to get these fuel stop tips from Susan and her interns, drop us a note at Focus at WILL, 300 North Goodwin Avenue, Urbana, Illinois, 61801. Susan Kundrot joins us on the second Wednesday of the month to talk about diet and nutrition. So she'll be back next month in November. Susan, thank you so much. Mm-hmm,
thank you.
This is Focus, and we pause here for a market update and news.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dave Dickey with a look at the marketplace. We're halfway through the Chicago Board of Trade session. We're seeing, as anticipated, wheat to the leader to the downside after this morning. USDA gave us a pretty bearish number on U.S. Ending stocks for 2011-12 for wheat, putting them at 837 million. The average trade guess was 733, and the high end of the trade guesses was at 805 million bushels. So all that wheat in the U.S. and also additional wheat in the world combining to push wheat stocks, wheat futures down hard this morning, and is being an anchor to some degree on the corn market as well.